You're listening to Play It Again, Swig. I'm your host, Jocelyn Swigger, and last summer I took time off practicing to have a baby. Maybe you can hear him. And now I'm trying to get my brain and my chops back in shape by learning the Chopin Etudes. So this is my audio diary of that process.
Well, it's January 23rd, 2011, and I'm going to start with 10 number 9, F minor. So Ben is with me. He is my special guest star again. And 2011, I have to say, has gotten off to quite a rough start. John went to Nicaragua for about a week, and he's back now, but he's sick, which is pretty common coming back from Nica. Last time we went, we both got a little bit sick coming back. Ben was sick, and then he got me sick, and then my grandmother died, and so I took Ben to the funeral in Texas. And then we came back, and then I got food poisoning, and it just has, in general, not been a very productive practicing time, in a nutshell. You know, sometimes practicing and work can be a really good escape from stresses and sadness in life, and sometimes that's been true here, but I've only been able to practice for usually like 10 or 15 minutes at a time. Which has been frustrating, aside from the other frustrations that have been going on outside of that. So it was not at all a good practice time in the last couple of weeks, but I've had some interesting kind of big picture thinking. And one thing is, you know, I've been thinking a lot in looking at these etudes, especially the ones that I've played before. I've been kind of thinking a lot about my own playing in high school and sort of remembering what that was like, or trying to remember what that was like. Because a couple of these pieces, especially the Black Key and the 10 number 2, this one, are ones that I worked on in high school, and I've been trying to sort of imagine what was it like that, you know, how did I play then, or my perceptions of how I played actually the way I did play. And when we were at my grandmother's house in Texas, my sister found a video that my mother made in 1990 and sent to my grandma for Christmas, and she included some of me playing. And so I got to actually hear my own younger self playing. There was another video that my mom had made for my grandparents' 50th wedding anniversary that had my playing on the background, so we watched that too. So I actually got to hear myself in high school playing the Black Key Etude, this one. And parts of it were pretty good. I had some good facility. The Black Key Etude was nice and fast. There were a couple of rough spots in it. There was some nice musical intuitive phrasing. I have to say I pretty much completely ignored articulation and dynamics for the most part, especially articulation. In just about all of the playing of my younger playing that I heard, I was completely ignoring articulation markings. And boy, did I rush every single thing that I played. I just rushed and rushed and rushed. So some of my perceptions of my earlier self are true. You know, I do need to work on my lifelong rushing habit, and I'm glad that I have something that I'm doing that. And then I guess the other thing I sort of want to say is, you know, it sounds like, and it certainly is true, that I'm having this over-intellectual response to this sad event of my grandmother dying. And that is true. But it also is that I, for me at least, I can find a lot of comfort and stability in music and in figuring out things about sort of myself as a musician that gives me a larger picture of myself in the world that I find comforting in the way that I imagine some people who have faith in some kind of a deity probably find comforting. For me, I find my relationship with music to be a comforting thing, although it can be certainly challenging and difficult. So that's some of the big picture stuff I've been thinking about. And because the last few weeks have been really hard to practice much more than 10 or 15 minutes at a time, because I've had Ben on my own a lot, I've also been practicing sometimes with Ben sitting on my lap. So I've done quite a bit more one-hand practice than I usually do. You know, I always say that you don't want to practice one hand alone unless you have a really good reason, because you get good at the right hand and you get good at the left hand, but you can't play the piece. But having Ben only happy if he's sitting on my lap, and that's the only way I can practice, is a pretty good reason to be practicing hands separately. So I did a little bit of that. Anyway, I'm thinking that certainly for the next month or so, while I get back into being at school and while I'm still having some things about my grandmother kind of floating around in my head, which is also, as some of you know, bringing up some things from my mother dying last year, I think I need to give myself a little bit more bite-sized goals for now. So I'm going to try to give myself assignments here that I can actually realistically expect to complete for next week. So some of them are going to continue to be kind of big picture, well, I'm going to get better and better at this. But right now does not seem to be the time for me to be very good at learning about subtlety. So like the F minor etude that I just played, that's got a lot of things. It needs a lot of polishing. But I think right now is actually not the time for me to polish. I don't know that I have the concentration or the time or frankly the will at the moment to do polishing. I think right now a better use of my time and of this podcast is going to be me getting the rudiments of a lot of these pieces under my belt so that I can do some polishing when I'm in a little bit of a better concentrating place. So I think I'm going to let 10 number 9 rest for a little while. I think I'm going to put it on the shelf. It's got way, way, way more things that I need to work on, but I think I'm going to let it sit for a bit and then bring it back and then probably let it rest again before it's full, before I actually perform it. But I think I'm going to put it on the shelf. So I wanted to look next at 10 number 4. This is one where I wanted to really focus on pages 3 and 4 instead of just starting at the beginning. And I did a reasonably good job of that. I also wanted to focus on playing just the left hand alone or just the non-little note version alone. And I did a reasonably good job of that, although that was harder with holding Ben because it does keep switching from right to left. I think I'm going to play this for you. It's still, you know, very much work in progress, as you'll hear, but I think it's ready to kind of get out there a little bit. This is not from memory, and you'll hear that it gets slower on pages 3 and 4. So this is 10 number 4 in C sharp minor. Actually late. to turn the page again. That the places where it wants to get most exciting and kind of go to a climax are the places where I'm stopping and stumbling and yelling a little bit. So I need to certainly work out those spots. My bite-sized piece goal for next week is that I'm going to come up with a really clear shopping list of exactly what the tricky measures are. And a couple of them I've already found, so I'm going to play the metronome game, which is where I start at a tempo I can play and then click it up faster and faster until I can get beyond the tempo that I want. I'm going to do the metronome game with measures 31 and 32, which is this. Especially at the end, it gets tangly. And also with measure 43, which is this thing. Yeah. I get tangly there too. So 31, 32, and 43, I've already got as spots that I need to really deal with. I'm going to do a little shopping list of other spots, but I'm going to try to have 31 and 32 and 43 on the road to being dealt with for next week. 10 number one, let me actually try playing this for you. But first I need to change Ben's diaper. Okay, we're just going to take a little break. Okay, I'm back. So I don't know if you heard it, but Ben made some spectacularly, kind of Benny Hill sounding sounds there. And he needed a clean diaper, so we changed his diaper. And, you know, I'm not going to spend this whole podcast philosophizing you to death, but I think part of the way that I'm actually in pretty good spirits, despite some of the craziness that's been going on, is that Ben is hilarious and also a really just jolly soul to be around. And it's hard to sort of be too serious for too long when he keeps doing really funny things. So he's pretty great. And he's rolling around and smiling at me. Okay, so I'm going to play 10 number one for you. This is the one that I'm constantly saying that my hands are so small and all that. Let me actually tell you about how working on this went. I did not do the slow metronome practice that I've been saying I'm going to do, except maybe twice in the last couple of weeks. I am committing to getting back to it. I think that's going to be really, really helpful for me. But it has not been happening. The opening and closing of the hands, I think, is helping. I've had a couple of days that felt really good. I need to go back to focusing on my enemies list of the measures that I hate the most, because I've been sort of ignoring them except when I play through. So I'm going to play through this for you, and I'm not going to do it from memory, I think. Yeah, I'm not going to do it from memory because I tend to get into loops, and then it takes longer than it should, and then I get tired and it doesn't work. This will not be completely tempo, and you'll hear there's some sloppiness and that sort of thing. But let's see how this goes. Okay, I lied. You know what? I can't actually do this not from memory because I have to be looking at my hands because of all the jumping. But I don't have it fully memorized, so I end up kind of taking wrong turns, or even if I don't take a wrong turn, wondering if I took a wrong turn. So let me start from measure 24. What happens? This is terrible. There we go. Okay, so it's a mess. It doesn't feel great. There are a trillion wrong notes, and you can see that I kind of lose my way in the big picture. But my arm isn't dying. It's not falling off, so that's good. There's miles to go before I sleep with this one. So here's what I'm going to do for next week. I am going to play it slow with a metronome. I'm going to do it at 8 beats per minute for every 2 measures. So that'll be like click. Click. And I can tell you that what I just did wouldn't have worked because I rushed on the way down. But I can hear that now. Like working with the metronome this way, even though I was lazy about it last week, is helping me have a better sense of that. So I'm going to do that. The other thing I'm going to do is I'm going to pay some attention to the enemy's list of measures. They were all disastrous, pretty much. Maybe not every single one, but mostly. And I'm also, aside from playing through with the slow metronome, I'm going to practice it kind of backwards. So like the last page first, and then the section before that, because there's quite a bit of repetition in here, and I need to make sure I'm not practicing the same thing over and over. You know, I don't need to play this every time it happens, partly because I can play it, but also because it shows up a lot. So I need to make sure that I'm kind of parceling out my time well. So that is my plan for 10 number one for next week. That's what I'm going to do. Okay, 10 number 7, this one still is pretty new, and this is one that I never worked on before. So I did actually do a fair amount of practicing right hand alone with Ben in my left hand. So here's a couple of different things I did. I did, this is this one. So you can hear all these repeated notes. So I did the chord and then the following repeated note. So. You listen to that whole thing, but that's how I was working on that. The other thing I also went back to doing was just doing the block chords, the sort of skeleton versions. I only played this for you. But I just kind of got lost. There we go. Mm-hmm. yuck. So maybe I should explain that when I'm playing my skeleton version, which would flesh out into... So if you listen to the bottom note of that, what I'm actually doing is I'm switching fingers when I play it, because if you just do it the same finger, it's a lot harder. So I'm going from my pointer finger to my thumb when I do this on that lowest note. So when I play the skeleton, I'm actually playing with both of my fingers on the bottom note, which is going to help me when I flesh it out into this, but also makes it a little more awkward sometimes. I need to keep doing exactly that with the skeleton. And I also need to make my shopping list of what the specifically tricky measures are. You know, you heard me yelling a little bit with places that were harder than others. There are a couple of spots that are very awkward in here, and I just have not done my homework of marking where they all are. So for next week, I'm going to have a shopping list of the most hated measures for this. But I'm going to mostly keep working with the skeleton like I've been doing, because I think that's actually really helpful with this. So that's where I am with 10 number 7. Next up is 10 number 2. This is one that I did in high school, and as I'm getting a little bit better at it this time around, I feel like it's getting harder. You know, sometimes as you get more familiar things with things, they get easier, and sometimes you get more familiar with things that they get harder, and this one is getting harder. So I said that I was going to only play pages 3 and 4 and not play pages 1 and 2, and I did that. I was really good about that. That's actually, I think, maybe the one thing I said I was going to do in the last couple weeks that I actually did. So instead of just starting at the beginning that I can kind of play, you know, this part. I didn't do that. I started here at this part. Problems. I just turned the page. No, I just totally skipped that. Let me do that again. From here. From here. Turning the page now. Again. So yeah, this, like I said, this feels like it's gotten more difficult rather than easier. That could be partly because of the couple of weeks I've had. Part of the way that I'm practicing this so you can hear that there are, well, maybe you can't, I actually just gave up. But there are parts that are harder than others. So in here, too, I need to go through and do my shopping list of the really hard measures instead of just focusing on the full 2 pages, which is kind of what I did. So I'm going to come up with my shopping list for this one, too. But you know what? I think I'm actually going to continue just focusing on pages 3 and 4. Because the way my concentration is right now, if I start at the beginning, I'm just going to kind of merrily play and not really pay attention, and it'll be sort of okay. Let me just play this for now, though, huh? Because it's fun. Ah, I said it was fun, and then it got not fun. Well, I need to work on that part. Ben likes this. I don't know if you can hear him. Anyway, so this one, I'm going to continue focusing on pages 3 and 4 and come up with a shopping list. And that's my plan for that. Okay, so I'm putting 10 number 9, this one, on the shelf. I'm going to start another one. And this one is actually not in Opus 10. I was going to go through all the Opus 10s first before getting any of the Opus 25s. But a student of mine is working on this one, so I want to start this myself so that I can help her and possibly sympathize with her. Now, this is, you know, she's actually been working on it for a few weeks. So I guarantee you that for at least the next couple of weeks, she's going to play it way better than me, which is actually really nice to have a student of mine playing something better than me. That's pretty cool. So the one that I'm going to start is going to be, let me see if I can find it. So this is 25, number 12. I've never played this. I've taught it, but I've never actually performed it. So this one is a little bit like this one, except that it actually fits the hand. So instead of stretching out the hand, it fits the hand really nicely, and it's in both hands. So it's this, super slow. Listen to this. And then it goes, but it's actually more like. Anyway, so I'm going to read through this slowly, through the whole thing slowly this week, and then decide on some practice strategies as they present themselves and report back to you what those are. Although I can kind of guarantee you that practicing it in chords is going to be helpful. I may even switch over to the skeleton after a couple of days of reading through, but I do want to just read through it for a couple of days, just to kind of play every note in the piece. Okay, so that is the playing that I have for you for this week. I'm going to finish up with the quote of the day and the fact of the day. So the fact of the day is maybe kind of gruesome. Well, it certainly is kind of gruesome, actually. But, you know, last week I was pointing out that Chopin's father was French and that Chopin spent his entire adult life in France. And so saying that we can think of Chopin as actually being a little bit more French than sometimes we do, we tend to think of him as being only Polish. So now let me tell you something that's a devil's advocate thing to that, which is that Chopin requested of his sister that after he died, his heart be cut out of his body and brought back to Poland. So after Chopin died, they cut his heart out of his body, and his sister Ludwika, I don't know if I'm saying that right, but let's call it Ludwika, took his heart in a jar of alcohol, which might have been brandy, back to Warsaw, where it is now embedded in the pillar of a church. So how do you like that? So he may have been, you know, certainly Parisian in a lot of ways, but his heart literally ended up in Poland. I did not mean that horrible pun to come out, but it just did. So there it is. Okay, here's my quote of the day. This is again from the Eigeldinger book, Chopin Pianist and Teacher. It says, talking about Chopin as a teacher, he always advised the pupil not to work for too long at a stretch and to intermit between hours of work by reading a good book, by looking at masterpieces of art, or by taking an invigorating walk. And that's from Gretsch and Grevink. So I thought I'd choose that as a quote for this week just because I'm trying to integrate, you know, Chopin into my life and have my life feel whole and like it makes a little bit of sense with maybe music as a structural element in that. But I love the idea that every experience you have can make you a better artist, you know, so every good painting you look at can make you a better musician. And I really do believe that these moments that I'm spending with Ben, where he's giggling or even crying, are going to make me a deeper person. And I think that can only make me a better artist. I hope that's true. That is it for this week. I very much hope that next week is uneventful and can just be a straight ahead practice week report. So that's it. And thank you so much for being my practice buddy. And Ben, you did great. Thank you for being my practice buddy today. And how did you get under there? How did you crawl all the way under there?